This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In national studies that measure income gaps in American cities, San Antonio frequently tops the list. Income inequality has harsh consequences for local education and upward mobility. Breaking out of poverty is very difficult. Forget the bootstraps. The Horatio Alger myth is not a template for success, because in America, a tremendous amount of life success is determined by the parents and their income. This is a tough problem, but not an impossible problem. We can create policy on a local and national level that will increase the odds of breaking out of poverty, but so far there hasn't been a lot of that. How have you witnessed income inequality? How can we get real in talking about this stubborn issue? What social economic factors contribute to what we consider poverty or what we see as wealth? Our call-in line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're going to kick off our conversation in just a few minutes, but first, we're going to hear some reporting from Patton Dodd of Follow Media. He's helping to lead an effort that will explore this issue in depth in San Antonio. He spoke to some San Antonio residents about their experiences with income imbalance.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Love you.
Every morning, I leave the most affluent zip code in San Antonio and drive downhill toward the poorest. This is the steepest hill in the United States, not by elevation, but by economics. That's according to the Distressed Communities Index, a 2016 study that examines economic conditions in the U.S. The index reveals that the gap in economic health between my neighborhood, the northern suburb known as Stone Oak, and San Antonio's near west side, across I-10, due west of downtown, is the widest of any city in the nation. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the median income in 78258 Stone Oak is over $100,000, and 78207, the near west side, it is just under $23,000. San Antonio's extreme inequality is a consequence of what's called residential segregation, the great chasms in income, education, job markets, housing quality, and more from one neighborhood to the next. For a year, I've been talking to people from communities experiencing poverty. One of them is Chris Carrillo, a 31-year-old real estate entrepreneur. Chris was the middle child of 11, born in the near west side to a mom who struggled to put food on the table.
We were so poor that the poor kids made fun of us. That's how it was, right?
Chris's family lived in 16 different homes by the time he finished high school, mostly public housing complexes. A few times, Chris's mom moved the family into Section 8 homes, single-family houses whose rent is subsidized by the federal government. But life in those homes had its own challenges.
My mom never knew what it was to be in a house, right? So it's not just the rent, it's the water and the electricity. And we had to figure out, okay, what are we going to do today? Are we going to keep the lights on, the water on, or are we gonna go, are we gonna get something to eat, right? And so that was a day-to-day struggle.
Still, Chris's story and his eventual escape from poverty hinges on a Section 8 home, one that was located just at the edge of Alamo Heights. Chris was 12 years old when his family lived there. His mom asked him to make a run to the store, not his usual grocery, but the more upscale Central Market on Broadway.
You see people just smiling, just walking around with the biggest smiles on their face, like where there's no worries in the world. I go there and I see Mercedes and I see some of the nicest vehicles I've ever seen and people just smiling, and I open up my eyes to there's a different way of living.
That experience changed Chris's life. He spent the rest of his childhood watching CNBC and learning to read finance books. He was trying to forge a path out of poverty, and he made it. Chris's story is not typical. Studies show that most people born poor stay that way. But his story also suggests what can happen if our neighborhoods are less isolated, if we get a glimpse of how people are living in other parts of town.
And now we're back in the studio live, and our phone number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980 to call into The Source as we talk about poverty in San Antonio. With me now is Patton Dodd. He is the editor-in-chief of Follow Media, and he produced that piece. And Patton, welcome to The Source. Tell me, what is Follow Media?
So it's a new nonprofit journalism organization focused on inequality in San Antonio. Follow, F-O-L-O, is newsroom shorthand for going back, following up on a story you hear it in newsrooms. What's our follow on the headline that we published? What's our follow going to be on that story? And we call our initiative Follow because we have one topic. We're going to follow up on stories pertaining to inequality in San Antonio week in, week out.
And what are you seeing as you go on this endeavor?
So far, I think the most pronounced thing is the stark divide that I described, that I've experienced personally. I've only been here 2 years, didn't know much about San Antonio when I first arrived, and the difference in housing, education, from one neighborhood to the next in San Antonio is really striking. If you drive around and really get into the neighborhoods and really experience the community, you realize that different parts of town are completely divided from one another.
So why is Follow Media, why are you focusing on income inequality?
Well, we were kicking around ideas for a journalism operation that would be focused on vulnerable families and children. And as we were doing research, learned that according to three studies in the last 5 years, San Antonio ranks number one in inequality. And the more we looked at the data, the more we realized that what's important here is the economic conditions that drive a lot of the situations that families are going through. And then additionally, we found that people weren't really aware, talking to local leaders, people who have lived in the community for a long time. I mean, certainly there's a lot of good charity work happening in San Antonio. Some people are very alive to this issue, but we found that there was a very pronounced lack of awareness and robust conversation about it. So we thought it could sustained attention to this issue is something that the community could really benefit from.
Are you able to look at data in San Antonio and determine if there is upward mobility or downward mobility, or what is happening with people who are not born with abundance in their life?
I think mostly people who are born without abundance in their life stay that way. There's not the chances of achieving a stable income or attaining affluence if you're born in one of San Antonio's distressed communities is very, very low.
And do we know why?
Well, this is a complex topic. I mean, there's a lot of issues. It has to do with education. It has to do with housing. It has to do with race. It has to do with the job market that's available, the level of pay for jobs typically in San Antonio. It's a very layered topic.
And it's a difficult topic to tackle, to talk about openly sometimes. Sometimes you start talking about race and other issues of choices, family choices, the way
right.
Families are structured. That can be touchy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it feels like a third rail sometimes, this topic does in San Antonio, maybe in any big southern U.S. city. But, you know, when you break it down to, like, the human level, and, you know, we're spending a lot of time on people's couches, just getting to know people in these neighborhoods, and I think putting a human face on it, it can go a long way.
And trying to understand the human story about why people in San Antonio are having a tough time breaking out of multi-generational poverty. We're going to continue the conversation. We're speaking with Patton Dodd, editor-in-chief of Follow Media. When we come back from the break, we're going to hear another one of his stories as he explores the issue in San Antonio. We've got other guests, and we've got a phone line that's burning up right now. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
That's what it was like coming in this house. It was condemned. You know what a condemned house looked like? Yeah, holes in the walls. It was condemned. Raining inside. You know what it is like staying in a house when it's cold in here and you're trying to stay warm? You know what it is to be up in a closet with a heater this time to stay warm because you had your dignity just to try to make it from one day to the next?
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about poverty in San Antonio. With me to do that, Patton Dodd, editor-in-chief of Follow Media. Also with me is Andrea Guajardo. She is the chair of the Workforce Solutions Alamo Board and regional director of the Community Health for Christus Santa Rosa Hospital System. Gabriel Acevedo, he is the associate professor of sociology at UTSA. And with me on the line is Jackie Gorman, CEO of San Antonio for Growth on the East Side, SAGE. And our phone line's are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So let's kick things off with a phone call from Teresa. And Teresa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I just have 2 points. I worked for the Workforce Solutions Alamo, one of the offices. And what blew me away was state employees getting paid so little that they were they could get benefits from the state. There's something wrong there. And I also saw in the youth kids being pulled out of school from their parents because they needed to go to work. That is going on today. It just blew my mind.
Teresa, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. So let's go to Andrea Guajardo. You're with Workforce Solutions Alamo Board. Talk about that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think this is something that we see, and not just state employees, but I mean, we see veterans who are dependent on WIC services and SNAP and TANF.
Veterans, but people who are in the service
who
presently.
Who are actively in the service. As director of community health at Santa Rosa, we operate 3 WIC clinics out of the hospital, and one of those locations is at Lackland Air Force Base. And I think it's surprising to a lot of people that our military, who are active duty, are in a state or a set of circumstances where they're in need of WIC and TANF services, TANF essentially food stamps. And this is the reality, and I think that this is across the board where we just have a median income that is lagging, and it's not sufficient to support what a family needs to survive. I mean, in the intro, you know, keeping the lights on, buying groceries, electricity, daycare, childcare. There are a lot of expenses that the average family experiences that their income is not sufficient to support that.
We've seen a movement with local government, like school districts, San Antonio City, and the county government that have moved that they would pay a living wage to all of their employees. So there were certain people in cafeteria workers and custodial and things like that that weren't even making a living wage. And so we've seen an effort by that, at least at that level, to try and help these people. If you work full time, you should not be in poverty. Do you believe that, Andrew?
Oh, absolutely. And not only should you not be in poverty, you should have a quality of life. That you're not just making enough money to pay the minimum. That your children are happy, and that there is some leisure and happiness in their lives, and that you're not breaking your back to support that family. And when we speak about a living wage, I think there was a recent report that noted that there is no state or no city in the country where minimum wage would pay for at least a 2-bedroom apartment. I think the cheapest was somewhere in Florida, where you needed to make at least $11.50 an hour to support a 2-bedroom apartment. So that it's a significant issue.
Gabriel Acevedo, sociology at UTSA. Do you see that happening with your? I know you work with kids quite a bit, getting pulled out of school to work.
Well, I think at the collegiate level, it's more that they're making their own conscious decisions to have to work. So in other words, I clearly see even at our level, it doesn't have to be their parents. But for many of these kids, depending on their background, they can go to school full time. They can live on campus. They don't have to work, or they can take a work study job on campus. But other kids who may come from more disadvantaged households, absolutely. They're going to school. They're working 25, 30, 40 hours a week. Some of my students are working 2 jobs at a time, and they're still trying to juggle, you know, 3-4 classes a semester. And so, you know, oftentimes I don't know how these kids do it. So even while, again, maybe at the high school elementary levels, at the high school levels, we may see things happening with kids in terms of working to support the household. At the collegiate level, I just think for these kids to finance a college education, to pay for their own, the things that they need, and then also the fact that they just don't have that kind of parental support. So, I would say that even at the level of the university classroom, issues of inequality and economic disparities weigh in as well.
And we hear frequently that education is the key to breaking out of poverty, but we've made that getting that key very difficult. Jackie Gorman, CEO of San Antonio for Growth on the East Side, what do you see? Tell me your view.
Well, I have heard stories. I can't say that I know of anyone individually, but I've heard stories of kids getting pulled out of school because they need to work to support their families. You know, I've heard stories about, you know, kids in summer internship programs where they're getting paid, where their family actually comes to the job to pick up their paycheck. You know, that's how important that is to them. So, you know, it's part of our reality.
As the CEO of SAGE, San Antonio for Growth on the East Side, there's been a lot of effort to try and bring up the East Side, some of the issues of poverty there. Are you seeing results?
You know, I think we're starting to see some results. Poverty, addressing poverty, though, is a double-edged sword because two things happen. One, the steps that people take to address poverty on an individual level, we're going to call those transactional because that goes to the person. And what happens is we do a very good job of getting folks training and getting them prepared to move into a higher paying career in workforce. And one of the first things that happens is that they move out of the community. And so the community that they are leaving, then that space in that community, let's call it, is backfilled by a person who may be in worse economic straits than the person that we helped move out. In the long run, that's not helping the community. That's not helping the place better. And so to really tackle poverty, you have to do work in tandem with those transactional services. So not only do we have to prepare that person to get a better job, but we need to be doing the other half of that work is bringing better jobs into the community.
So we had a comment on our Facebook page from John Owens who said pretty much that same thing, talking about people who, once they move up, get better jobs, that they move out of those neighborhoods and they move to Stone Oak and these other parts of the city. But what about, so I guess you could call that maybe reverse gentrification, but what about actual gentrification happening in some parts of San Antonio as we bring jobs to these other neighborhoods and these neighborhoods are lifted up, that we see people pushing other people out of those neighborhoods? Jackie?
Well, that's why these things can't happen in isolation. They have to happen in tandem. We have to have people working to improve the neighborhood for the people that are already there. That doesn't mean that new people can't come into a neighborhood or a community because they'll need to for the community to grow. But we have to be very deliberate about that, and we have to be very intentional about protecting those people who are already there and helping uplift their circumstance so that they can take advantage of the new jobs that are being brought into the community, the new amenities that are coming to the community, the better housing options that are coming to the community. All of those things have to happen together.
Okay, another caller, Casey. Casey, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Doing good.
All right, great. So I guess my issue with what I guess the gentleman said earlier about equality and race, it has a big issue to deal with. I'm a Caucasian man here in San Antonio, and I work for $11.35 an hour. That's what I make through a temporary service working through the city. My question to him is, how are you going to bring race up on this issue? And my question is, and the reason why for this is because if you want to work, you're going to pull yourself out of poverty. And yes, I know it's hard. I'm still in poverty. I don't get food benefits. I get turned down jobs all the time because I don't speak Spanish. There's so many people here that have the options at their feet. They just don't want to work. There's a lot of people that get that check that don't want to work. I don't understand it. You can't bring race into this, man. You just can't do it. It's a matter of a person's self-will. That's all I got to say. Other than the cost of living in San Antonio is outrageous. Your city employees make anywhere from $13.50 to $17 an hour, and yet your city mayor is pulling in $400,000 a year, or was. There's a big difference in the gap in the minimum wage here for regular people, and it sucks.
Okay. We lost Casey there mid-sentence. That wasn't us. We just lost him. So what about that? He brought up a lot of issues. Number one, let's talk about race. He brought that up. We know from statistics that particularly with childhood poverty, that childhood poverty rate for African-Americans is almost 50%. overall in America, it's 20%. So there is an issue of race there. Is that what we're talking about, Patton?
Yes. I mean, I totally understand his perspective. The race issue comes up because of the stats. The data is pretty clear that white children are more likely to live in high-income areas, and poverty rates for Latinos and black children are higher, nearly three times higher in San Antonio than they are for white or Asian children. So I understand that it's hard to be poor no matter what your race is. And I grew up that way, and so I'm very familiar with that struggle. But the data kind of speaks for itself that, you know, in terms of children living in poverty in Bexar County, there's 130,000 of them, and 103,000 of those are Latino. So the numbers are, you know, pretty strong.
So, and Andrea, do you want to address that?
Yeah, I think that we live in a majority-minority city. Like you said, 59.3% of our city is Latino or Hispanic, and of that number, more than 80% live in poverty. And the reality that this gentleman experiences today is something that I hear quite a bit, but it doesn't erase the reality that minority populations have been disadvantaged as a result of social inequity for many decades. We can look at class, immigration status, and we can look at race and ethnicity as well. And the data shows that children who live in poverty as a result of issues of race and class. This is the truth, and especially here in San Antonio.
Jackie Gorman?
Well, I just wanted to correct something that the caller said. You know, he said that the mayor was making $400,000 a year, and actually the mayor of the city of San Antonio makes around $61,725 a year. Council people make around $45,722 a year.
Yes, thanks for that point of correction. I don't know where he got that number from, that $400,000. But anything about the race issue? I mean, it seemed like misdirected anger about frequently people, they work hard, they don't know why they're getting ahead, and they wonder, you know, what's going on.
And, you know, I think that poor people are poor people. You know, I do think that race plays an issue in the depth of poverty here in San Antonio. Can I understand his frustration if he's working for $11 an hour? I certainly can, but it will be far easier for him to move away from that $11 an hour job than it would be for a person of color.
And tell me more about that, Jackie.
Well, I think that, you know, I was at a conference last week, and I heard something that was profound to me. And it was systematic racism and the resulting wealth gap is the wall that we need to be worried about here in the United States. And I think that's true. The resulting wealth gap between African-American and Latinos and non-Latinos and non-African-Americans is huge. And that's not something that's going to be addressed by anti-poverty programs. It's something that we can try to address. But it is a systematic issue.
All right. So, and Gabriel Acevedo, real quick.
Well, I think we deal with this constantly in the classroom. I mean, as a sociologist, you're trying to get students to see the bigger structure of society, how social forces impact individual lives, but at a more aggregate level. But that's not to take away that people's personal lived experiences are most important to them. So if I'm a white Anglo male and I am having a hard struggle, I'm going to be sort of in conflict with whatever these statistics say. And in short, I mean, I don't want to open up too big a can of worms, but the Trump phenomenon is not all of it, but part of that electoral success comes out of him being to tap into a lot of these underlying animosities and feelings that you know, groups of people have had for some time.
Well, large can of worms opened. We'll get back to that when we come back from the break. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We're talking about poverty. I don't want to get into Trump, but I want to get into that can of worms and other stuff. We're talking about what can be done about San Antonio's nagging, stubborn poverty issue. 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Ever since the Spurs came in, that's the first time we ever got any help over here at all, because we had no sidewalks, no curbs. When the Spurs came in, they started doing from Walters back this way to make it easier for traffic to come through. So thank God for it. because it was really a mess. Water stood everywhere. I mean, we spent many, many hours sitting in cars waiting for the water to go down so we could get home.
San Antonio, we've got decades and decades of economic segregation behind us here in San Antonio. How are we going to move forward? What's a possible solution for dealing with our poverty issue, especially when we're one of the most economically segregated cities in America? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about this issue that just seems to be part of our DNA here in San Antonio. Why are we so poor? There are multiple causes for poverty. One of them is the overall labor market in San Antonio. We've had a lot of fluctuations in that area. But right now, you know, labor unemployment is below 5%. Education, San Antonio has fractured education attainment opportunities. We know that some of our school districts operate better than other school districts, and we got lots of school districts. How the families are structured, that's a big issue, because we know that single family households, especially when they're led by women, tend to have children that are in poverty, and they're going to stay in poverty for much of their life. And also race does play a factor. We know that if you're an African-American, a Mexican-American, that you're going to have a tougher time trying to find upward mobility, and upward mobility is tough for anyone now in America. So where are we with poverty in the United States? Give us a call here in San Antonio, 210-614-8980. With me is Patton Dodd, editor-in-chief of Folo Media. He is part of a nonprofit journalism project that is looking at income inequality in San Antonio. And Patton, so tell me more about your experiences as you traveled the city looking and talking to people.
Well, I think that one of the most profound things that we've been able to do is to try to just wrap our heads around this issue in general by beginning by just driving around out of the neighborhoods that we live in, into the east side, the west side, the south side, just getting to know San Antonio visually. And
it seems like you're in different cities, right?
It does, absolutely.
I mean, you can be on the north side, and you've got all these gated communities, and everything is nice and spiffy, and then you go to the other side of the city, and it feels like you're in a different place.
Yes, and traffic notwithstanding, if there is no traffic, it doesn't take that long to get there. I mean, you're not that far away.
So I think that's what people need to understand is that, I mean, there are no walls. They're going to separate one side of San Antonio from the other. We have to realize this really is one city. And let's look for low-hanging fruit, easy opportunities where we can maybe lift people up, so that would have a greater impact on the overall poverty, statistic. Andrea Guajardo?
I think we have to, as a city, go way further upstream than just saying, you know, I'm going to take a look at a neighborhood on the south side or the near west side in some of the most, poverty-stricken zip codes and say, how far back upstream do we need to get to increase our workforce? It's my opinion that we need to look at literacy and numeracy by third grade, because that is the point at which you learn to read between those grades. And beyond that, you're reading to learn. So if you're not gathering all of your skills to be able to read and write and your skills in numeracy by that point, then the rest of your secondary education is not going to prepare you for college, if college is where you need to be. It's certainly probably not going to prepare you for a certification or a vocation as well. So that's where we're seeing, for example, for the first time in 2012, Latinos surpassed their white counterparts in enrollment in college, which sounds like a really great stat. We're finally enrolling the Latino population in college, but they're not graduating with a four-year degree, because they're either enrolling in a two-year community college and not moving on to a bachelor's degree, or they're not prepared enough to complete that bachelor's degree, whereas their white counterparts are surpassing in graduation rates.
Gabriel Acevedo, sociologist, UTSA. So we're talking about economic segregation. Why is that a bad thing from a sociological point of view? It's good news is we've got some pockets of wealth in San Antonio. That's great. But they are cloistered in their own area, and everyone else is someplace else. Why is that good or bad?
Well, clearly on the whole, it's going to be a net negative for the community, for the city, because you have essentially an untapped source of labor, an untapped source of resource, an untapped source of intellectual capital that does not have access to equivalent resources as other folks. So it's inevitably, it's not the idea that the one small group is going to bring everyone up. The idea is if we don't work together to stabilize this this type of economic inequality, the entire community is at a loss because, again, we have a completely untapped section of our community.
Jackie Gorman, CEO of SAGE, talk about what's happening on the east side in regards to trying to break these cycles of poverty.
So one of the things that we're working on is the East Side Education and Training Center, the EDSE. And the idea is just that after high school, there has to be further training to prepare people to enter into the workforce. So a collaboration of partners has opened the EDSE. It's an old elementary school that SAISD wasn't using, and we've turned it into a workforce and training center. I think the next step that we have to take a look at, and one of your other participants brought this up, is looking at college persistence. It's one thing to enroll them in college, but it's another thing to persist and have them complete college. And so I think that some of our next efforts will be toward tracking, better managing, and better supporting our high school graduates through college persistence and helping them complete that four-year degree or that two-year program. You know, we're seeing exciting things happening at Sam Houston High School that are, you know, allowing the students who will graduate from Sam Houston to graduate with college credits. And so there are efforts afoot to help deal with that moving forward.
Let's go to the calls. Catherine is on the line. Catherine, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to, I guess, put my two cents in. With a lot of the topics that are being brought up, I mean, there's great points and some that could have a little bit more constructive criticism. I mean, I know the other caller mentioned about, you know, wanting the willpower, needing the willpower in order to move up. And I agree with it. You have to have some type of willpower there. However, when it comes to a family that learns together will grow together. And in order to have that growth, you need to have that type of education in the household. And it's really hard when, you know, education is stunted in so many different areas of town. I mean, my husband came from the Harlandale district and I came from Alamo Heights. And you can see the difference in the teachers and the equipment and the education and the lifestyle that his mother had growing up, you know, by himself with, you know, only one income coming in versus my household with two families, and knowing that you have to have that motivation and that education behind you in order to get out of situations that you want to get out of. I mean, I do agree with San Antonio being extremely segregated when it comes to not only the race, but also the economic growth in certain areas versus the other. I think with everything having to do with this, it has to do with the education in San Antonio itself.
All right, Catherine, thank you for the call. I sure do appreciate it. I'm going to move to another caller because I got so many of them here. Renee, hi, Renee. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, my question is brief, and that would be, how is it that we can afford to live in the city based on, you know, knowing how the poverty rates are in our city and our county, when we're extending the city so much that, you know, it's almost becoming, or my fear is down the road, it become unsustainable for many people to live here because of the cost of being able to live in the city.
What do you mean? I mean, you don't understand.
Talking about is the infrastructure. And, of course, added to that would be the being able to attain a good paying job. And when you look at the property taxes, how they're going up, and the fact that so many city services are cut left and right for the poor. And I'm talking about after school programming. You're talking about cutting hours in libraries. You know, it all kind of accumulates in a person's life.
Okay.
And
All right, Renee, thank you for the call. So Andrea.
I'm not quite sure I understood his question, but what I heard was, you know, how can people afford to sustain life in our city? And I mean, I'm involved. I'm very proud to be a member of SA 2020's board and the Health Collaborative, and there are lots of other nonprofits in the city that are working on this issue every day of how to support those who live in poverty and how to create change around all of these issues. And I think it really has to do with a great deal of neighborhood reinvestment, not gentrification, going into particular zip codes and finding out what are the priority issues for that neighborhood, whether it is education, whether it's job training, small business. There are a lot of things that can revitalize a particular zip code that can make it more inhabitable and a better quality of life for the residents in that neighborhood. And you know, there are lots of people working on that, but it's a steep hill to climb.
But we do look at our branch libraries on a weekend. I find them to be flooded with people, a queue of people trying to get onto the computers.
Exactly. And that's when we can talk about the digital divide in San Antonio. Why are people sitting outside in their cars trying to access the Wi-Fi, you know, when that library hours, you know, when they're not open? Because there are still a lot of gaps that we need to fill.
And we know that if you don't have access to the internet, then you're cut off from a very vital part of the economy and also opportunities for self-education, which is really a major force for moving yourself out of poverty. We're going to take one more break. We'll come back to the phones, take some more calls, talk some more about San Antonio's poverty issue, economically segregated, one of the top cities for that in America. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about poverty in San Antonio. You don't have to go far to find it, but we don't like to talk about it. And so I'm really glad we're having this conversation today. With me to do that, Patton Dodd, Editor-in-Chief, Folo Media, Andrea Guajardo, she's the Chair of Workforce Solutions, Alamo, and the Regional Director of the Community Health for Christus, Santa Rosa Hospital System, Gabriel Acevedo, he's a Professor of Sociology at UTSA, Jackie Gorman, CEO of San Antonio for Growth on the East Side. Patton Dodd, why is it important that we have these sometimes difficult conversations talking about poverty?
I think one of the biggest challenges about this issue in San Antonio is that it's usually invisible for a great majority of the people in this town. You can, you know, go into the East Side and go to a Spurs game and you take the interstate in, take the interstate out, and not really encounter the neighborhood where the AT&T Center is. You can go to your favorite, you know, taco stand or coffee shop and not know that if you went four blocks in the other direction where your Google Maps won't take you, you would encounter, you know, a neighborhood that would appear to you to be in significant distress. It's invisible. It's hidden. You know, we're a car culture, and it's easy to avoid this. And I find one of the promising things that we've been finding so far is that when we talk to people who are unaware, they usually don't resist the topic. Once they begin to learn a little bit about what's happening to their fellow San Antonians, they care. Once they're made aware.
But Jackie Gorman, people, I think if they did break out of that zone and they went to the East Side, they would find a pretty cool place.
I think you're right. And that's one of the things that happens as a result of economic segregation, is that when folks are around people with the same circumstances as themselves, they tend to not be as aware of the circumstances for others. And so one of the things that I think that we really have to do to kind of deal with this issue of economic segregation in our community is to create opportunities for mixed income living. You know, that's why I am a real advocate for new multifamily opportunities that are coming to the East Side that include mixed income. So we have market rate people, we have what's considered affordable, and I'm not talking about subsidized housing, but affordable housing, and those are two totally different things.
Let's go back to the calls. Rogelio is on the line. Rogelio, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I just have a couple ideas. I was thinking the city government has to step in, city or county, and what a lot of people really need is just experience in you know, big companies or around business. So if you know, folks that you know, don't come with backgrounds of business, if companies can take them in, take them under their wing, and the city can somehow subsidize these companies, you know, and reward them for doing that, I think that'd be a great program, because what people really need is just experience to work around that environment. Once they learn it, you know, 3-4 years of that environment, you know, they're pretty much set. That's just one idea. Another one is why don't the city build maybe housing for teachers that can that are high quality teachers. The city can build these apartments or some of the houses that are empty, you know, construct them, and they can let the better quality teachers allowed to stay in these places, and you know, free or reduced you know, rent.
That's an interesting idea, Rogelio. Thank you for the call. To the first idea he had, Andrea, so mentorships.
Right, and that's a significant piece of what Workforce Solutions Alamo does, and WSA has relationships with lots of small and large employers in San Antonio, most notably Toyota, to train people with advanced manufacturing skills. Advanced manufacturing is one of the most high-priority job categories in San Antonio, and through these programs, recruit and train people into those jobs. Toyota has a high demand, not just within their plant, but also within their vendors and their suppliers that are on campus there. And it's been an initiative of the Department of Labor for some time, and something that San Antonio has been participating in.
Gabriel Acevedo, so the second part of the question, it's kind of unworkable, the thought about building houses for teachers and stuff, but it brings up an interesting thought about the government's responsibility, either locally or nationally, to try and do something about poverty, and that versus individual responsibility. And how does that weigh as we look at it as a, through sociology?
Well, as a sociologist, we're trained much more to look at social structure and the way that society influences our individual outcomes. So, you know, for instance, a median home value in the most expensive parts of California is $800,000 a year. $800,000 for the median home value here in parts of Texas, McAllen, Edinburgh, it's $80,000. So somebody born today in one of those areas, all of their life outcomes are essentially impacted just by the zip code they were born in. So I think what policies can do is to try to sort of, to the best of our ability, even out that early start, right? Can we just level the playing field so that at a minimum, my house may not be worth $800,000, but maybe I can get health care. So it's those types of things that I think public policies can be realistic, and maybe even in partnership with business. That was what's interesting about that call. He had two solutions that seemed to straddle both private sector and public policy solutions. And maybe that's a direction that more and more folks can start talking about.
Another caller, Julia. Julia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. My name's Julia, and I'm actually 17 years old. I go to a nonprofit art program called SACE, and something that we're focusing on with our next exhibition is economic inequality and how that ties into educational inequality. So I wanted to bring up the question of where exactly does the youth play in this issue, the people who maybe aren't old enough to vote, non-taxpayers, but still have to reap the consequences of economic inequality and something that their older generations kind of had in their hands?
Okay, that's an interesting question, Julia. Thank you for that. And one suggestion I would have as a journalist, I'd say document your experiences. You're dealing with these issues firsthand, and you're seeing things close up, and you and your family, write it down, put it in a song, do something with that, and get that information out there, because you are critical of being able to relay what exactly is happening to you. And someone who is also documenting this and trying to explore that is Patton Dodd, editor-in-chief of Folo Media. What do you say?
Absolutely. Document it. Use your voice and use the technology available to you today. You know, Snapchat, Facebook, Twitter, like get it out there.
And you wanted to say something, Andrea.
Right. And also recognize, Julia, that at 17 years old, you are about to become a new generation. And there is a generation coming after you as well. And especially in the arts, which, you know, minority children do not necessarily always have the best access to art programs. And so you can yourself become a mentor to younger folks like you in lower grades that may not have the same opportunity that you've had. But obviously, yeah, become a mentor.
Jackie Gorman, CEO of SAGE. I know that you come in contact with a lot of enthusiastic youth who want to change the world. What do you tell them?
I tell them to become involved, you know, to go to the community meetings, go to public hearings, volunteer to serve on boards and commissions. Civic engagement is the key, and you have to become involved. You have to talk to people other than your friends about the issues that concern you.
Okay, another caller. Well, we lost our caller. Well, so the central issue of economic segregation and upward mobility is fairness. You know, is it fair that I can work really, really hard, try to achieve, to break out of the cycle of poverty and not get anywhere? Gabriel Acevedo, you know, the issues of fairness is central to sociology. Does that have an impact on people?
No, well, absolutely. I mean, I think at a very basic level, we have to ask ourselves as a society, what is it that best benefits all of us? And I think there's compelling evidence that then when there is more of an even playing field for all individuals who are part of the society, it tends to work out better for all of us. Again, that's not to say that we will ever rid completely inequality as part of societies, because, again, economists, sociologists, anthropologists have been dealing with this question forever. But it's really a matter of how much inequality and how is it that we can at least tie together the private sector, public policy, to alleviate some of the more damaging aspects of these inequalities.
What happens, Gabriel, when people lose faith that we have the myth that we live in a meritocracy, that if you work hard, you will be able to achieve some success? That myth is important to keep people in line frequently. So what happens when that myth evaporates?
Well, I think what ends up happening is that, you know, it's not that they're not isolated cases. You know, Bill Gates dropped out of Harvard, and we have all these cases that people introduce of individuals who rose up and lifted themselves up by the bootstraps.
But he was born in a pretty well-established.
Absolutely.
He was not a poor kid.
But as a general rule, again, one of the things that we talk in our classrooms with our master's students, undergraduate, is that we have to be interested much more in aggregate large-level patterns. And that example that I just gave, the disparity between a median household of 800,000 and 80,000 is humongous in one country. And for a child to be born in one of those areas, all of their life outcomes are determined just by the random chance of where they were born. And I think that is inevitably unfair. And in the end becomes a moral question. Do we want to live in a society where so much of our life outcomes are simply determined by some random occurrence like where we were born? And we see really quickly other countries in Scandinavia, other parts of the world that tend, and I'm, you know, not America bashing, that's not the point, countries that tend to do a better job in terms of the data of sort of leveling out that starting point.
Jackie Gorman at SAGE, San Antonio for Growth on the East Side. How do you help make sure that people retain hope?
That's such a difficult question. You know, hope is in seeing people around you do better. You know, hope is knowing internally that you're doing good work, that you are working hard and seeing the fruits of your labors. That's what hope is.
All right, Jackie Gorman, CEO of San Antonio for Growth on the East Side, Gabriel Acevedo, sociology at UTSA, Andrew Guajardo over at the Regional Director of Community Health at Christus Santa Rosa Hospital, and also Patton Dodd, Editor-in-Chief of Folo Media. Their website is folomedia.org. We also have a link to that on our website at tpr.org. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.